Welcome to this week's edition of Far West Texas. Readings from the Big Bend Sentinel, the Monahans News, and the Fort Stockton Pioneer, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hello, this is Michael, reading from the Big Bend Sentinel. These articles were published online Wednesday, February 3rd, 2021. Vaccinator teams arriving soon to Fort Davis and Marfa. Shots sent to Alpine and Presidio. By Abby Perot. A team of vaccinators with 900 Pfizer vaccines will arrive in Fort Davis on Monday and Marfa on Tuesday, aiming to vaccinate the area's senior citizens and individuals with certain chronic illnesses. As the number of vaccines arriving to Texas each week slowly rises, vaccine hubs, designated providers that receive more doses of COVID-19 vaccines from the state, are distributing more doses to rural areas. In the Tri-County, the Midland Memorial Hospital Hub has stepped up to get vaccines sent out, giving hundreds to Big Bend Regional Medical Center for Alpine and Preventative Care Health Services for Presidio over the past weekend, and bringing both vaccines and workers to Fort Davis and Marfa to assist with one-day vaccination events next week. Midland Memorial CEO Russell Myers said in a press conference on Tuesday, what used to be 4,875 doses has now been recognized as closer to 5,800 because the Pfizer vaccine is supposed to have five doses per vial and actually has six. So we're getting a good bit more supply than what the state is actually allocating to us, and that puts us in a position to share with others. The Midland Memorial Strike Team will bring 400 vaccines to Fort Davis, which will be distributed on a first-come, first-served basis on Monday, February 8th at the fire station on 200 Court Avenue from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m., or until they run out. Patients will enter the parking lot from Woodward Avenue, park and walk into the station to be vaccinated. Vaccinators will return to give the second dose on Monday, March 1st at the same location. The following day, the strike team will travel down to Marfa with 500 doses. Vaccinations will take place at the AmVet USO Visitors Center building at 302 South Highland Avenue and will run from 10 a.m. until 4 p.m. or when they run out. Patients are asked to be on time for their appointment slot, bring a photo ID, and enter through the front entrance of the building. Appointments are required, and patients must call Marfa County Clinic at 729-3000 to make an appointment in order to be vaccinated. Registration is open to Tri-County residents. In Marfa, Don Culbertson's Marfa Clinic has volunteered to partner with Midland Memorial to assist with appointment making and the giving of vaccines. The city of Marfa is also contributing the building and EMS and law enforcement assistance. City staff and Rio Grande Council of Government workers will also help with making calls to get appointments set up. Culbertson said the Midland strike team was initially planning to bring 200 vaccines, but at his request, bumped the number to 500. Vaccinators will return to give the second dose on Tuesday, March 2nd at the same location. Both Fort Davis and Marfa's vaccine events will focus on 1B eligible patients, those over age of 65 or people 16 years of age and older with at least one chronic medical condition that puts them at increased risk for severe illness from the virus that causes COVID-19, such as, but not limited to, cancer, chronic kidney disease, COPD, heart conditions such as heart failure, coronary artery disease or cardiomyopathies, solid organ transplantation, obesity and severe obesity, body mass index of 30 or higher, pregnancy, sickle cell disease, or type 2 diabetes. Healthcare workers who fall under 1A may also be vaccinated. We have to adhere to a very, very strict 1A and 1B criteria, Culbertson said. He had initially hoped to bring in frontline workers, like staff from the post office, library, schools, and others, but the plan was aborted, he said, when it was explained vaccinations must solely fit the rigid 1A and 1B eligibility. In good news for the entire region, anyone from 1A or 1B in the Tri-County is welcome to travel to Fort Davis or Marfa to take part. Culbertson wants to make sure Midland Memorial teams go back with nothing left over, wanting all vaccines in Fort Davis and Marfa used up by the end of Tuesday. While Marfa is getting assistance from a strike team on Tuesday, Presidio's PCHS clinic is responsible for handling distribution of vaccine batches from Midland on their own. A few local officials were able to shed light on why some cities in the area are getting strike teams at this time, while others are not. Presidio EMS Director Melinda Richardson said Midland Memorial's trauma coordinator is not sending teams as long as we have someone in the area saying they can administer the vaccine and have shown they can do it. Though PCHS CEO Linda Molinar was not available for comment before press time, Molinar said at the weekly area-wide vaccine conference call on Tuesday that if her clinic can get more vaccines, her local PCHS staff is ready to administer them. Richardson said PCHS has done a phenomenal job, pointing to this past weekend when CEO Molinar herself drove to Midland and back to bring 400 Pfizer vaccines on dry ice. The clinic distributed the entire batch over 2 days, though they did have to shutter its regular clinic operations for 1 day. Still, Judge Cinderella Guevara has asked the Regional Advisory Council to send a strike team to Presidio. PCHS is using a list it has compiled itself to set up vaccine appointments, and EMS Director Richardson worries that they may be better at reaching their own primary care patients, and their own patients may be better at reaching out to them to get on the list. She worries that those who rely on telemedicine or those who seek care in Ojinaga do not realize they should or even could get on the local PCHS list. Presidio has a large population over 65 and a large population of under 65 that have comorbidities. When we transport a patient, even for those 40 to 60, I would bet a good solid 30% of them have diabetes, Richardson said. That's a huge risk factor with COVID, but they may not use the PCHS clinic. To sign up with PCHS, call 432-837-4812. I worry most about people who live in the one-room apartments, who don't have kids in Presidio anymore, don't speak English, are not comfortable picking up the phones to make calls to deal with the healthcare system. Those are the ones totally at risk of falling through the cracks, Richardson said. My honest dream is that we have the National Guard be activated like they are for 5 counties in the northern part of West Texas, and have them come out here and do vaccines just like they did testing, Richardson said. But you've got to have enough vaccines to do that, and you've got to have the National Guard activated. How to get in line for a COVID-19 vaccine. Vaccines are available through a variety of places now. For those frontline healthcare workers, those over 65, and those over 16 with certain chronic illnesses. Below are resources to sign up for a vaccine appointment or to get on a wait list to be called when appointments are available. Vaccines at the Monday event in Fort Davis are first come, first serve at the Fort Davis Fire Station, 200 Court Avenue, from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m., or until they run out. To sign up for the Tuesday event in Marfa, call the Marfa Clinic at 432-729-3000. To get on a wait list at Big Bend Regional Medical Center in Alpine, call 432-837-0430. To sign up with Preventative Care Health Services with clinics in Alpine, Marfa, and Presidio, call 432-837-4812. To sign up for a vaccine appointment in the city of Pecos, visit www.reevescountyhospital.com and click Sign up for the COVID-19 vaccine at the top of the page. State bill seeks new parent school for Sol Ross. By Stephen Paulson, Alpine. Sol Ross State University could soon have a new parent organization. Roland Gutierrez, the new Democratic state senator for District 19, on Monday filed a bill to transfer SRSU and its satellite schools from the Texas State University system to the Texas A&M University system. Proponents of the change, including Gutierrez, say the school has floundered in recent years and needs fresh ownership. But the news blindsided some locals who say they would have liked more input in the process before the filing. Meanwhile, the Texas State University system says it's managing the school well and will do whatever it takes to keep Sol Ross. In phone interviews and in an informational packet, Gutierrez outlined why he says Sol Ross could be better served with a different university system. Under Texas State, the school has faced falling enrollment numbers, with the student body declining more than 20% from 2009 until 2019. In the process, Gutierrez argues, the school has become a money pit. The state sends SRSU annual funding of around $11 million, and yet the school in a typical year only graduates around 300 people, according to Gutierrez. That's pretty pathetic, he said. On the other hand, he says Texas A&M has a history of taking over and improving Texas universities, including in Laredo, Corpus Christi, and Canyon. He says there could be a natural synergy between Texas A&M and Sol Ross, since both offer majors like geology, veterinary science, and range management. The transfer is a no-brainer, Gutierrez said. He argues it would improve not only the prospects of Sol Ross, but of Alpine and other neighboring communities, which rely on student dollars. I believe that A&M is a better fit for Sol Ross to prosper, he added. If this one move will make the lives better for young kids in West Texas and give them opportunities, then that's what I want. The bill seems to have caught both school systems off guard. When the Big Bend Sentinel contacted representatives for both systems on Tuesday, neither had put out a news release on the bill. When reached for comment on Tuesday, a spokesperson for the Texas A&M University system declined to offer an opinion on the bill. He also declined to comment on whether A&M was aware of the proposed ownership change. "We are neutral," John Sharp, the chancellor for the A&M system, said in a statement to the Big Bend Sentinel. "We won't support it or oppose it, but we will do whatever the legislature decides." Mike Wintemute, a spokesperson for the Texas State University system, says Gutierrez had previously discussed the proposed ownership change with Texas State, but he disagrees with Gutierrez that the move would improve Sol Ross or Alpine, and said Texas State had previously shared documentation arguing Sol Ross was in good hands. Prior to filing his bill, Gutierrez says he reached out to the Texas State University system seeking more information on the system's 5- and 10-year plan to improve SRSU. "That was 60 days ago," Gutierrez said. "We haven't received anything." Texas State disputes this assertion, saying it sent Gutierrez's office multiple copies of a 118-page planning document. "All indications are that things are improving quickly," Wintemute said, "and we have some data to back that up." Like A&M, Texas State says it will ultimately accept whatever the state legislature decides to do, but SRSU has been part of the system since its founding in 1917, and the school has worked well within the system, Wintemute said. "We believe our system is the perfect fit for Sol Ross," he said. "One goal of Texas State," he said, "is to celebrate the individuality and uniqueness of our institutions." Wintemute also pointed to school president Pete Gallego, who was appointed last summer after input from the community and who Wintemute said is clear-eyed about the challenges facing the school. "President Gallego is significantly focused on enrollment trends," he said. "Every indication is that things are improving quickly." Wintemute contested the claim Sol Ross was faced with falling enrollment. Instead, he provided data showing enrollment has fluctuated over the years, often climbing during busts in the oil industry and vice versa. Economic realities do impact enrollment, he said, and Far West Texas, unlike other places where Texas State has schools, has not had the kind of population growth that other parts of the state have. Pete Gallego and his chief of staff, Michael Pacheco, did not respond to requests for comment on the bill. If A&M does ultimately take over the system, it's unclear what would happen to Gallego's role, much less to other mainstay institutions of the school, such as the Museum of the Big Bend. If the changeover does happen, Gutierrez said he would ensure to the extent that I can that beloved Sul Ross institutions like the museum are protected. But he acknowledged those decisions may be out of his hands. Those issues would not be decided by laws, but by the Texas A&M Chancellor. Regardless, the move has raised questions for some in Alpine, including city officials who say they were blindsided by the move. They want to know more about what the switchover would mean on the ground, not only for Gallego, but for faculty and students. I'm trying to understand the why, said Alpine City Manager Eric Zimmer. Before you make a hard turn, there should be key conversations with people in the community. Gutierrez, for his part, says he has been having those conversations. He's spoken to Brewster County Judge Eleazar Cano about the proposal, he said, as well as to Alpine City Mayor Andres Andy Ramos. As Gutierrez sees it, his plans were no secret. He spoke about it on the campaign trail as early as 2018 when he first ran in a special election for his current state Senate seat. We've been talking about it for about 4 years, he said, stressing that he had been in contact with Judge Cano since then. Judge Cano did not respond to a request for comment. In an interview on Monday, Ramos confirmed that Gutierrez had met and discussed the proposal with him about 3 weeks ago. Zimmer, the city manager, was displeased to learn this. Ramos has yet to put that on the agenda for his mayor's report, he said, stressing that Alpine, as a weak mayor system, was primarily run by city council. When asked about this, Ramos stressed that those conversations were informal. It just became official yesterday, he said of the bill. Like Gutierrez, Ramos felt that Sul Ross could be better served by new ownership. It's always been in the back of my mind we need to get either Texas Tech, the University of Texas, or A&M to oversee Sul Ross, he said. And like Gutierrez, he thought that A&M, with its focus on agricultural studies, would be a good fit. Alpine and Brewster County regularly sees infighting among its local officials on issues like jail admittance and accusations of wrongdoing at Alpine Police. But rather than politics, Ramos said the move was about making sure Sul Ross students were well served. I think that's the number one priority, Ramos said. We should put everything aside and concentrate on our kids. And as he saw it, handing Sul Ross over to Texas A&M would be a boost to Alpine. Extended Balmoray Closure Presents Headaches for Swimmers and Local Businesses by Stephen Paulson. Texans let out a collective groan last week as the Texas Parks and Wildlife Department once again pushed back a reopening date for Balmoray State Park and its famous swimming pool. In a news release, TPWD said the park would be closed for the foreseeable future and that a reopening schedule will be announced at a later date. The park has been closed more or less continuously since May 2018 after workers discovered what TPWD called structural failure. It opened in March 2019, but closed in July of the same year. In March, TPWD estimated renovations would last until the summer. In June, the park announced that it was adding 600 acres, but wasn't yet reopening. In the meantime, local businesses have had to grapple not only with the pandemic, but without a park that once played a big role in the local economy. The indefinite closure has been disappointing for visitors, including those from the region and tourists from around the country. Before Balmoray closed in 2018, it regularly saw around 200,000 visitors each year. It's also bad news for Jeff Davis County and for the nearby town of Balmoray, where visitors to the pool often stopped by to purchase snacks and swimming gear. The town had long relied on a steady stream of visitors, including to the local scuba center, a rare sight in the Chihuahuan Desert region. In 2018 alone, the park contributed around $103,000 in sales tax dollars to Jeff Davis County, according to a study by TPWD. First built in the 1930s and watered by nearby San Solomon Springs, the park's flagship pool, which holds around 3.5 million gallons of water, is the largest spring-fed pool in the world. Built during the New Deal as a Civilian Conservation Corps project, it later became part of the Texas State Park System in the 1960s. However, recently the pool has fallen on hard times. After it closed for repairs in 2018, local historian Joe Nick Patowski warned in the Texas Observer that state parks were in peril, pointing to deteriorating and underfunded public lands. Without major funding from the legislature, he wrote, TPWD was forced to rely on creative land swaps, public-private partnerships, and philanthropy. When reached for comment, a TPWD spokesperson said Balmoray had dedicated state funding and generous donors, but due to the complexity of the projects, it's taken full park closures to completely address the repairs, she said. Instead of funding, the spokesperson said the latest delays were tied to the coronavirus pandemic. She pointed to shortages in building materials, like stone and steel, as well as to COVID infections among repair crews, which she said had forced TPWD to demobilize workers as they isolated after exposures and recovered from infections. In the meantime, the region has had to do without the usual swimmers. We love Balmoray tourism because it sends traffic through Fort Davis on Highway 17, said Melissa Henderson, the executive director of the Fort Davis Chamber of Commerce. People are in Big Bend, and they want to go swimming before they leave or on their way. Fort Davis gets that through traffic. It definitely makes a difference for our shopping and restaurants, Henderson added, noting that area hotels also get a lot of overnights from tourists visiting the park. But while the Big Bend tourists are still coming, no one is visiting Balmoray these days. Also feeling the pinch is the town of Balmoray itself, said Pat Brehalba, treasurer and secretary for the Balmoray Economic Development Corporation. In normal times, the town's economic fortunes were also boosted by events like an annual softball tournament. But when the coronavirus pandemic arrived in the region last year, it nixed those public events. Making matters worse, the oil industry, always a fickle revenue stream in the region, has recently experienced a downturn. When the oil field was here, we didn't even need tourism, he said. They were very good for the community as far as money spent at stores and restaurants and RV parks. But now, like the pool tourists, the oil field workers were mostly gone. Rahalba admits that tourists and swimmers were never a big revenue source in the winter, though there were the occasional scuba divers. But after a rough economic year, and with health officials finally distributing vaccines in the region, we were looking forward to getting back tourism from the state park. Brehalba hopes the park will reopen soon, but as to when exactly that will happen, Brehalba says it's anybody's guess. It's very frustrating at this point, he said. We're in bad shape. As Presidio plans for new hotel, local hotelier donates to city redesign. By Stephen Paulson. Presidio has big plans for its downtown, including a proposed new convention center and hotel. In an effort to entice private investment, the city is offering to give away free land for the hotel. Those plans, in their early stages, are part of an effort by city officials to infuse the industrial border town with tourism. Last year, Presidio officials hired Carlos Jimenez, a Houston-based architect and professor at Rice University, to draw up plans for its convention center. Jimenez has previously designed a number of structures for Marfa businessman Tim Crowley, including Hotel St. George, the Crowley Theater addition, and a redesign of the Stardust. According to city officials, Crowley helped connect the border city with the architect. He also footed one-third of an approximately $50,000 bill for Jimenez to draw up designs for the convention center. The other two-thirds came in equal shares from the Presidio Municipal Development District and the City of Presidio, which drew from general funds. Brad Newton, the PMDD executive director, described Crowley as a friend of the project. The convention center will be owned by Presidio, and the city hopes the drawings will help it receive grants to pay for construction. Crowley took interest in those efforts, city officials explained, in part because he hopes to put a hotel on the free land. Although the city has discussed plans for a hotel since at least July, the city has not issued yet a formal request for proposals, RFP, that would allow businesses to make an official bid. Crowley did not respond to a request for comment for this story. Jimenez describes his design for the convention center as Southwestern vernacular, a modern building with the refined simplicity of Southwest architecture. It has adaptable rooms, as well as outside walls to block hot rays during the summer. We wanted to create a building that can be very flexible and also generous in terms of its space, Jimenez explained. As part of its bid for more tourists, the city has already formed a new cultural district. It's been revamping its American Legion building for events. For the hotel, city officials want something with at least 80 rooms. That would almost double Presidio's hotel bed capacity, and at the very least, could help visiting officials stay in Presidio instead of nearby towns. There could be some hiccups in Presidio's tourism vision, including a Mexican plan to route commercial traffic through the border city. But if all goes well, the city might become a draw for tourists on their way to Mexico, Fort Leeton, River Road, or Big Bend Ranch State Park. And Crowley, just as in Marfa, could be at the center of it. Presidio city officials stress that Crowley, who was appointed a regional assistant district attorney earlier this year, will be considered equally in any RFPs to build a hotel on the free land. Nonetheless, Crowley, now also a public official, has donated to and become a friend of the project that will be closely connected to a downtown Presidio hotel. In a phone interview, Presidio Mayor John Ferguson acknowledged why some residents might be concerned by these optics. He said he had read a 2019 story in which the Big Bend Sentinel reported that Crowley at the time was not paying Marfa hotel taxes. It's very fair to ask all these questions, he said. Still, as mayor, I'm pretty excited that there's somebody who's interested in doing a project, he added. It's a great thing to see somebody come in and want to do something. While he hopes to see Presidio become a bustling tourism hub, the town has at times trended in the opposite direction as stores board up and residents move away. If a convention center and hotel were finally built, it would forever change Presidio. The opportunity was too good to pass up. Authorities say lost horse allegedly served drinks to minors, by Stephen Paulson, Marfa. Two people are facing charges in Presidio County after authorities say the lost horse bar was serving drinks to minors. Among the people facing charges is Michael Shaddix, who last year bought the bar from founder Ty Mitchell. Shaddix switched out third-party food vendor El Camino for an in-house kitchen and rechristened the bar the world-famous Lost Horse Saloon, as the Big Bend Sentinel previously reported. Shaddix faces a Class A misdemeanor for allegedly serving drinks to minors. He turned himself in to authorities on Sunday afternoon and bonded out around an hour later, according to records from the Presidio County Sheriff's Office. Another person, a bartender, faces the same misdemeanor charge, as well as another Class B misdemeanor for allegedly not identifying herself to police. Shaddix did not respond to requests for comment. At press time, it's unclear what led up to the arrests. The Marfa Police Department, which handled the case, declined to comment, instead referring questions to Presidio County Attorney Rod Ponton, who will prosecute the charges. The Texas Alcoholic Beverage Commission, which regulates the sale of alcohol in Texas, also declined to comment, instead referring questions to Marfa Police. However, the agency said it was working with local authorities on the case and also had an investigation into the matter. T. TABC has conducted around 60 inspections on the Lost Horse since it opened in 2012, most recently in September, a spokesperson said. Ponton, the Presidio County attorney, declined to comment on the allegations when reached for comment on Tuesday, citing the pending case. When asked whether the case against the bartender would consider the fact that her employer also faced the same allegation of serving drinks to minors, Ponton declined to comment on particulars, but in general, he said, all facts surrounding a case are evaluated.
Hi, this is Jack. I'm reading the Fort Stockton Pioneer, dated Thursday, January the 28th, 2021. Front page. Can Fort Stockton reclaim Spring City? The Meadows Center for Water and Environment at Texas State University and Texas Water Trade released a new study that seeks to uncover a significant question many have been eager to answer. What would it take to restore perpetual flow at Comanche Springs in Fort Stockton? Once the sixth largest spring in Texas, Comanche Springs was, for centuries, a true water oasis and treasure. The springs, fed by the Edwards Trinity Aquifer, provided a water supply to native populations, early settlers, and downstream irrigators, and supported a small but important desert ecosystem. Yet the springs were not immune to the effects of a growing state. Significant groundwater pumping upstream caused Comanche Springs to stop flowing reliably in the 1950s. Over the last decade, however, the once quiet springs have begun flowing again in the late winter months when the aquifer has rebounded from summer irrigation pumping, bringing with it hope for a new, flowing future. While there have been a number of hydrogeologic studies on Comanche Springs over the past 70 years, none have fully assembled the history of the flow system, nor have they evaluated the policy and economics behind bringing back year-round flow. Therefore, the Meadow Center and Texas Water Trade teamed up to develop the first roadmap to restoring spring flows, taking an in-depth look into the historical hydrogeologic policy and economics of Comanche Springs to determine what it would take for Fort Stockton to call itself Spring City once again. To bring back year-round flow, we focused on answering two key questions in this study: how much flow is needed from the springs, and how much do we need to reduce pumping from the Edwards Trinity Aquifer to achieve that flow, said Robert Mace, executive director of the Meadows Center. Based on results from surveys and flow data of the nearby springs, the study estimates that the daily flow to Comanche Springs must remain above 10 cubic feet per second and have an average annual spring flow of 20 cubic feet per second to meet health and human safety and species requirements. To achieve the recommended spring flow, researchers determined that pumping should be between 26,000 to 35,000 acre-feet per year to meet a daily minimum flow of 10 cubic feet per second. We conducted a systematic analysis of historical estimates of pumping and spring flows, which revealed that the current groundwater model overestimates pumping by about 50%, which means that it may be predicting more pumping than is possible to manage the aquifer's sustainability, Mace said. Based on our findings, we recommend revising the model to reflect more accurate assessments of pumping and recharge. The researchers suggested using voluntary, market-based cooperation of groundwater owners in the Comanche Springs contributing and recharge zones as a viable path forward to reduce groundwater pumping in the Edwards Trinity Aquifer, and therefore restore perennial flows. Given the importance of agriculture to Fort Stockton and Pecos County, our goal for this project was to identify the optimal solution for restoring the spring while maintaining agricultural productivity and doing so with the voluntary cooperation of local groundwater owners, Charlene Lurig, CEO of Texas Water Trade, said. We believe this market-based approach will offer win-win solutions for Fort Stockton's economy and environment. While there is still more work and analysis to be done, the study recommends several hydrogeology, water market, and policy strategies that can be achieved in the near future to restore flow to Comanche Springs, as well as funding sources to implement the strategies. Restoring spring flow would help to sustain the natural ecosystem. It would also create new opportunities for recreation and tourism, which we estimate would amount to $4 million a year in new revenue to the Fort Stockton economy and 72 new permanent jobs, serving as a model for using a market-based approach to protect springs and rivers across Texas. Next steps as a result of the study involve a multi-pronged approach, some of which are already in process. Texas Water Trade has raised almost $1.5 million in funds to establish a pilot market in Pecos County to incentivize on-farm water conservation. The Middle Pecos Groundwater Conservation District, the agency charged with managing and protecting groundwater in Pecos County, is currently improving the groundwater model. Recognizing the opportunity of a restored Comanche Springs, Congressman Will Hurd sent a letter to the Secretary of the Interior requesting the department's technical and financial support for the springs restoration at a scale proportionate to its economic and ecological value. The research was funded by the Fort Stockton Visitors Bureau, the National Fish and Wildlife Foundation, and the Cynthia and George Mitchell Foundation. County maintains low active case level, by Nathan Heuer, Pioneer Editor. COVID-19 active cases have been trending downward since the beginning of the new year, and that total took an even sharper decline in the past week. The number of active cases dropped to 27 on Thursday. That's the lowest total since October 19th, a span of 94 days. Active case numbers in Pecos County maintained in the 20s since Thursday, marking 5 consecutive days under the 30 mark. If the county reaches 7 consecutive days under 30, Pecos County Judge Joe Schuster said he will likely apply for out of station through the governor's office, meaning restaurants and indoor eating facilities in the county would be able to increase their capacities to 75%. Right now, I'm leaning towards applying for out of station because of the business end of it. I don't want them to be punished anymore. But they would still need to wear their masks during that period of time. The out of station would include the Pecos County Rodeo, an always popular event in the area. The judge added on Wednesday that the number of pending cases is at a low amount, suggesting that the county will more than likely get to 7 consecutive days under 30. As of Tuesday, January 26, there were 26 active cases in Pecos County, putting the county's total number of positive tests since the start of the pandemic at 987. There have been 4,145 tests taken, with 2,919 of those tests coming back negative. Former police lieutenant sworn in as municipal court judge, by Nathan Heuer. The city of Fort Stockton swore in Maribel Perkins as a municipal court judge on Tuesday, January 26th, at the city's regular city council meeting. Perkins brings a wealth of experience to the position after serving as an officer for the Fort Stockton Police Department for the last 15 years. This will be a new chapter to your storied career with the city of Fort Stockton, the mayor, Chris Alexander, said before the swearing-in. You've been an awesome police officer. Perkins left the department as the lieutenant of the Criminal Investigation Division. Fort Stockton Police Chief Robert Lujan, who was in attendance, said she will be dearly missed but is excited to see her get an opportunity as a judge. This will be a challenge for her, and she's going to do an exceptional job. I know that about her. Perkins will replace Joe Munoz, who was also a previous trooper for the Department of Public Safety. City Council appoints three new CVB board members to conclude the City Council meeting. Board members appointed three new Fort Stockton Convention and Visitors Bureau board members to fulfill three-year terms. Adam Gonzalez, Heather Pass, and Vishal Chopra were selected for the terms, with the latter two getting unanimous votes from all City Council members. Gonzalez is the only newly appointed member to have previously served, doing so from 2005 to 2011. The trio will replace Luhan Tovar, Renee Gaylord, and Junior Senna. The appointment of the three new members comes after a motion at a previous meeting by City Councilman Ruben Falcone at a previous meeting to have applicants apply with a more thorough application in place that specifically requested greater detail into their plans to increase tourism. At Tuesday's meeting, Falcone expanded his thoughts on the motion. The thinking behind it was, we have keeping Fort Stockton beautiful. We have a lot of boards, but EDC and CVB, those are money boards. EDC has a requirement for their members. My motion was that we need to see what the people interested in the board wanted to do to improve tourism in Fort Stockton. The hotel owners, gas station owners, restaurant owners, we want to know what the city council is doing to appoint people to increase tourism and increase sales tax revenue. Gonzalez, Pass, and Chopra will join the seven-member board, along with Mayor Alexander Sabrina Reese, Jordan Gonzalez, and Victor Baca. And Tejitos Gomez opens new store location. After years of hard work and perseverance, Sergio Gomez and his wife Sonia Gomez are beginning to reap the rewards of their labor. On Friday, January 22nd, the couple opened a new desert store and Tejitos Gomez at 609 East Dickinson in Fort Stockton. The location also features their longtime food truck, Los Gomez Food Truck, and an additional trailer that serves wings in the parking lot of the location. The business is a family affair, as Sonia's daughters and Sergio's stepdaughters, Jeanette and Alexa Landeros, work with their parents as well as their cousin Desiree Gomez. Doña Lopez, Alonso Gaitan, and Letty Gaitan also help with the business. The store opening comes 4 years after Sergio and Sonia began working in the food truck industry. Sergio, who worked for M&J Trucking for nearly 7 years after moving to Fort Stockton, said his wife took charge and led their family into the industry. He added that initially they had helped a woman with a white food truck trailer in the Dollar General parking lot before temporarily taking it over due to a leave of absence. Once the lady returned after her pregnancy, they decided to get their own food truck, Los Gomez, which started approximately 3 years ago. Up until 4 months ago, both the Los Gomez food truck trailers were in the parking lot of Advanced Auto Parts. Sonia and Sergio then purchased the building at 609 East Dickinson to open their new desert shop while keeping their food trucks in operation outside. Sergio ensured by stopping his trucking job and committing fully to the business with his wife, kids, and family. The longtime Las Cruces, New Mexico resident stated he works 20 hours a day on average, but enjoys the time with his family while making a living. Sergio and Sonia one day hope to own their own supermarket and pass their business down to their kids and generation to generation. And Tejitos Gomez is open from 11 to 11 every day, while the Los Gomez food truck is open from approximately 11 to 10 p.m. each day. Burn ban lifted temporarily in Pecos County. The burn ban in Pecos County was officially lifted on Saturday, January 23rd, after a 180-day span of the ban being in place. Fort Stockton Fire Department Chief Jesse Dominguez stated the recent snow and rain in the county has opened a small window for Pecos County residents to burn their brush. Dominguez, who is also the County Emergency Management Coordinator, added that if residents of the county need to burn their brush, to do so now, since there is a good possibility that the ban may go back into effect at the end of February. Citizens planning to do a burn also need to contact the Fort Stockton Police Department before doing so. Winds must be under 10 miles per hour when burning, and the burn must be done during daylight hours under supervision with a water source nearby as a precautionary measure.
Hello, I'm Jesse. I'm reading from the Monahans News for Thursday, January 28th. COVID-19 vaccines begin Thursday. Active cases dropping sharply. The story was written by Paul Cyphers. Ward Memorial Hospital received 246 doses of the Pfizer vaccine from Medical Center Hospital Center, CEO Leticia Rodriguez told the news on Wednesday morning. The distribution will begin on Thursday morning at 8 a.m. at the Ward County Coliseum, located on Stockton Boulevard. Shots will only be given to those in Category 1A or 1B, to those currently on the waiting list. Hospital personnel are calling those individuals. Those on the waiting list should not go to the Coliseum if you have not been called by the hospital. The number of active COVID-19 cases in Ward County has dropped sharply, according to the Wednesday update from County Judge Greg Holley. As of Wednesday morning, there were 83 active cases, 610 confirmed cases, 393 probable, 906 recoveries, and 14 deaths. Last Wednesday, there were 181 cases. But there is no schedule for allocations for Monahans Pharmacy and Ward Memorial Hospital, and the two clinics have been approved. There are now over 900 people on the waiting lists at the pharmacy and hospital. However, vaccines are being administered in Odessa at Ratliff Stadium and in Midland at the Horseshoe Arena. Inoculations at Ratliff Stadium are being conducted by Medical Center Hospital, and pre-registration can be done on the website secure.echd.org. A drive-through lane for those who have registered for the vaccine, and another drive-through lane for those who need to register. Long lines have been reported ahead of the 9 a.m. start. At Midland's Horseshoe Arena, shots will be administered indoors, not as part of a drive-through. Pre-registration is required and can be done at www.midlandhealth.org. Hours are 10 a.m. until 5 p.m. Monday through Friday and will continue as long as supplies last. Lighting improvement for library approved. The story was written by Paul Cyphers. Meeting in regular session on Monday morning, the Ward County Commissioners approved a change order for library renovation and accepted a donation for the Ward County Sheriff's Office. The approved change order added a total of $9,800 for an additional light fixture type G provided by K-Bar Electric Incorporated of Boyd, Texas, on the west wall above the reception desk. The cost brings the total for electrical work to $269,800. The new fixture is a high transmission with excellent light distribution and uniformity. The original plan called for a $70,000 lighted wall mural that would have been installed behind the service desk and is being replaced by the new $9,800 lighting. Quote, "This is a beautiful fixture and will save us money in the long run," Commissioner Larry Hanna said. Commissioners also approved acceptance of a $5,000 donation for the Ward County Sheriff's Office from Occidental Petroleum. In a letter to Sheriff Ferran Valle, Samantha Lombardo, Director, Community Relations and Employee Engagement, said, quote, "It is our intent that these unrestricted funds be used to purchase H2S hydrogen sulfide monitors," end quote. Faye said that the donation would be used for that purpose. Commissioners present for the meeting were Tino Sanchez, Larry Hanna, Dexter Nichols, and Eddie Nelms. County Judge Greg Holley was also in attendance. City Council moves on replat for Dollar General location. The story was written by Christy Sullivan. Meeting for the last time in January, Monahan City Council members met for a short agenda, and after establishing a quorum and approving previous minutes, the board considered agenda items such as land replat, MOTRAN renewal, and trustee appointments to the Monahan's Volunteer Fire Department. Topping the list was a replat of the land located at 600 West Seeley, where the new Dollar General store will be built. Quote, "The replat is needed for a small moon-shaped piece of the land near the alley, which was abandoned by the city and excluded from the original warranty deed. This replat would let them continue and not interfere with construction of the new store," City Manager Rex Thee said. The council voted in October 2020 to sell the land to the Monahan's Economic Development Corporation in the amount for $59,589, so they could in turn offer the land for sale to the Dollar General. At the time, MEDC Director Ashley Adaltu said, quote, "They originally wanted a location on the north side of town, but we couldn't locate anything that would meet their needs. This spot is as close to the north side and is more suitable for them," end quote. The new Dollar General will be located on the entire north side of the 600 block of West Seeley between Fay and Eva Street. The action was approved as printed. In regular business, council members agreed to renew their silver membership with Midland-Odessa Transportation Alliance, or MOTRAN, for $1,000 based on City Manager Rex Thee's recommendation. Quote, "I was able to attend several virtual meetings free of charge due to the membership and got some useful information out of those meetings," he said. In the final actionable item on the agenda, council members accepted the trustee appointment of Leslie Moore to another 3-year term. Moore's new term will expire in January 2024. Other trustees are Melvin Kraft, whose term expires January of 2022, and Roy Bean, whose term expires in January 2023. The council convened an executive session to discuss personnel matters, municipal court judge appointment, and consultation with attorney, pending or contemplated litigation, Eric Hemphill versus the city. After reconvening to open session, the council reappointed Judge Lori Asbury to another 2-year term, and no action was taken regarding the pending or contemplated litigation between Eric Hemphill and city. The next city council meeting will be held at 3 p.m. on Tuesday, February 9th, in council chambers at City Hall, 112 West 2nd Street. Broadband Committee recommends NCOM for project. The story was written by Christy Sullivan. Board members of the Monahan's Economic Development Corporation, MEDC, approved a professional service agreement with NCOM, a division of JSI, for engineering services for the new 13-mile fiber loop internet conduit to serve the commercial and industrial business in Monahans. The board learned in November they landed a $1.5 million federal grant for the project. MEDC met for their regularly scheduled meeting on Monday, where Carol Faulkner with Faulkner Consulting LLC told the group the broadband committee had come up with a recommendation for the engineering work of the project. Quote, "After we sent out for proposals, we got 6 responses and narrowed that down to 4, Faulkner said. The committee conducted hour-long interviews with the 4 companies who made the shortlist and were able to decide on a unanimous recommendation of NCOM of Lubbock. Quote, "NCOM has a great team and has an already established relationship with AT&T and Encore, which is a huge plus for us. They know the area and the business as far as producing a set of plans and specifications and will be a big help to us in getting the scope of services and schedule," he added. With the board approval of the recommendation, the next step is for NCOM to come up with the design and scope of services along with a cost breakdown. That will then be presented to the board for approval. The total project cost was expected to be about $3 million, and the grant required 20% to come from local funds. Quote, "The plan is to eventually extend the fiber out for residential customers, which is critical now considering the current pandemic and how many people are working and doing school from home. In regular business, the directors approved accounts payable for the month of November totaling $455,000, which included $54,000 for the property located at 802 South Main, $118,000 to Maverick Engineering for detention ponds and planting, perimeter roadways and utilities for Desert Ridge, Monahans Parkway Phase 2, and project representative, $115,000 to J.D. King for Monahans Parkway Phase 2, $253,000 to Unix General Contractors for Monahans School Access Roads, and $5,000 for payroll and salaries. The final report reflecting a balance of $2.5 million in available funds and minutes of the December 21st regular meeting was approved. Directors present were Richard Irwin, Hal Upchurch, Brian Franks, and Eddie Nelms. Camilla Blum was absent.
Thank you for joining us for this week's edition of Far West Texas. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.